Okay, very good. So now we enter the second half of this session, and what I'm going to do is there are no specific talks scheduled, and we have kind of I think well actually the next session starts okay, the next coffee break is not for a little while until 16:22, so we've just got about 50 minutes of time to discuss. If we don't need it, we don't need it. So we've got plenty of time to explore lots of ideas. So let me just share the live doc that was from the agenda so that we have something maybe as a kind of support to talk from. Okay. So hopefully if I click here, people can see the live doc. Good. So the purpose of this session is to kind of explore this idea that, I mean, as far as I know, there aren't any long-lived particle searches which heavily use machine learning, which have been kind of successfully recasted. Perhaps that's still true even after Jan's talk, because if I understood correctly, the ones that you've used so far are just kind of still the cut-based ones. Although in principle, there's nothing to stop you from using the BDT-based ones. But for me, I mean, this seems like it's kind of a looming problem that we'll probably have to deal with, since I imagine that a lot of the kind of legacy analyses from run two for long-lived particles and possibly in run three are going to be using boosted decision trees or neural nets to kind of get as much sensitivity as possible from the LHC data. So we need to kind of plan now ahead to try and figure out if there's a way that we can make sure these are actually useful. Not just now, but 40 years in the future, when all the analysts have gone, and when potentially all the TMBA doesn't exist anymore. So this is the purpose of this workshop, of this discussion session. And okay, I've put down some thoughts here that we can maybe kind of go through. So for example, should we, if an analysis uses machine learning, should we be preserving the XML files for the BDTs and neural nets? If so, kind of, will we need to store dependencies like TMBA to be able to read them, or can we do something more clever? Is there something that we can use for neural networks, because those are obviously more complicated objects? In other cases, are we going to need perhaps containerized analyses? This is something that Atlas is already working on in terms of the recast framework. And if even if we can preserve a BDT and run it, in the future, is it even going to be possible to reproduce the output if, for example, the analysis is using kind of detailed response of the detector? So not just kind of variables which exist nicely in truth level. So, the width of the cluster or kind of whatever, like what happens then? And are there ways that we can design our analyses as experimentalists, I guess, I'm speaking as an experimentalist here, that we can avoid such issues? So those are just some thoughts, and I guess maybe we can, maybe it's worth starting with the obvious statement that this is assuming you want to generate new events and run them through the analysis. Now, I guess the Smodels approach is kind of taking it from the other way and saying you don't need to generate any new events. All you need is to provide the efficiency maps in terms of, I guess, some kind of simplified models that are understood by Smodels. So I guess that's the other side of the coin, is if you don't want to have to kind of rerun your selection on a new set of signal events, how can you make sure that you're using the right model that can be understood by things like Smodels? So, okay, as I said, there are some discussion topics here. If people have some thoughts, maybe now is the time to jump in. I can't currently see the chat, so okay. Yes. So maybe this first question, should we be preserving our BDTs and neural networks on HepData? So maybe this is a good kind of way of starting the discussion, and people, if they have thoughts, please jump in.
Maybe I'll get started, but I mean, Atlas, I work on SUSE. I usually don't attend the LLP forum that often. But when it comes to preserving on HepData, one of the things that gets to be a little bit annoying is to depend on anything that preserves the data in some sort of binary or opaque format. The reason for this is that then you depend on a specific version of some program to read that format, but then you also can't necessarily guarantee that it will work, you know, 40 years down the line. The example with BDT is that you would need to then depend on root TMVA. And for those who generally work with root TMVA, they've seen quite a lot of changes in the API of that for root, where older versions of BDT were not readable in newer versions of root. And this tends to be a little bit annoying. I think Andy is in the participant list, and when we discussed this at the one of the RAMP efforts that was organized by Sabine Crammel, is Andy wrote this really nice script that converts BDT to C++. And I think that might be the easiest way forward, because then you're not relying on a binary format, and it's just a C++ file that you can compile at some point in the future.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, actually, isn't it? That, like, even if you are preserving a BDT on HEP data, for example, in TMVA, there's no guarantee that that people will even be using that 50 years down the line. But if you, because a BDT is not a complicated object, you can, you know, it's just a set of kind of trees of if-else blocks that you can then just wait at the end. And in fact, yes, so this tool that Jordan was mentioning, that Andy wrote, is a way of converting a TMVA BDT into just raw C++ with no other dependencies. So I guess the only assumption you need to make then is that people will still understand C++ in 50 years' time, which, given the experience with Fortran, I think is probably the case. So that's probably already a nice thing to state, is that you can, it is, as of, you know, as of quite recently, possible to store your kind of BDT as just pure C++ or pure Python on HEP data. So I guess probably we should be suggesting that people do that, right? If it's that easy.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent idea, because I mean, that also makes it sort of framework independent, right? So you don't have to depend on any of the internal experimental framework.
Absolutely. Now, there is a catch though, right? So the catch is that you need to be able to run it on inputs that are equivalent to the ones that were trained on. So for example, if you're just using kinematic variables that you can just apply some sort of smearing on, then this is fine. But okay, in my analysis, we use all sorts of variables, like, you know, the number of hits in any given layer of the calorimeter, or you know, the kind of width of the kind of leading cluster of the jet, which are not things which are easily you can easily get from truth level information. So I think there's still a bit of a hurdle here if you're using, let's say, non-standard inputs. But if, as many BDTs do, and even in long wave particles, people often use kind of variables which you can kind of write down a proxy for at truth level, then I think this is already a kind of big step forward, right?
I was thinking about this a little bit, you know, in the past with Susie, you could imagine that analyses have both a single bin, which they optimize for discovery, and they tend to be a little bit simpler for theory to basically re-implement if we were not giving specific details or likelihoods in that case. But then there was also, you know, a more complicated multi-bin that, you know, threw everything we had, the kitchen sink at this. And I could imagine you kind of do something similar here, where you use a BDT to, you optimize to maximize your sensitivity, but then you also have a simpler form that's close, but it's not as optimal, but has a reduced set of inputs. But again, my concern here is that this adds a lot more work on the experimental side, and it's not like we have, you know, idle hands at the moment.
I think, so the suggestion is, that you would basically produce two sets of results. One of them, which is like the super fancy schmancy one with all the machine learning that gets you, you know, plus 20, plus 50% sensitivity. But then you also have one, which is basically a cut-based version, which is less sensitive, but has the benefit of being reinterpretable. And yeah, this is more work for experimentalists. I mean, my counter argument to that concern would be, you know, I think it's always worth putting in that additional piece of work to have something which can be used again and again and again, rather than something which is a kind of one-time, you know, a disposable result, so to speak. I mean, I know that not everyone necessarily thinks in that way. Kerry, you had a comment.
Yeah, so I think putting in the effort to make something reinterpretable is worth it. I totally agree with that statement. But I think asking LLP analyzers to do essentially a second search with a second background estimation when these analyses are already so complicated and take 2 years is not the most efficient way to do that. I think figuring out a way to either provide like parameterized efficiencies of a BDT or neural net, if it's an object level BDT or neural net, is much easier and much more helpful than doing a second less sensitive search. That's just sort of my opinion. Like figuring out a solution for this that's on like a 2 to 3 week time scale is something that we will actually do as experimentalists. Doing a second search that takes 2 years to do is not something that's going to happen.
And I suppose the other thing is, how do you present, you know, in a practical point of view, how do you present that in the paper itself? You know, you've got two sets of results and you have to worry about things like, do they actually agree with each other? Like all sorts of headaches like this, which seem like they ought to be trivial, but you know, in practice, you know, if you are doing two searches, then you have a whole additional set of questions which come up. So you know, if this can be avoided, presumably this is, yes. Sorry, Andy, I saw that you were unmuting, but I didn't invite you to speak, so please go ahead.
All right, I think I was going to drag things back in the direction of that tool to say, well, for one thing, give credit where it's necessary, and say that Louis himself has actually added some features to that. So it's not entirely my thing, although it has my name on it. But also this point about making sure that the kinds of features that are available to be put into the reinterpretation need to be ones that can be generated without having to run a full simulation reconstruction, etc. But I would hope that actually the fact that there are systematic uncertainties that need to be propagated as well mean that the BDT must not have been horribly overtrained in the first place. So you'd hope that the sensitivity to the very, very fine details of those features that are available at full reconstruction level is not overtrained, and therefore you can take something which is a reasonable approximation to it as well. Now, maybe the bias is, if you have something really systematic that, say, changes all the jet scales coherently, then you're going to be putting in features which are all too low by some systematic offset. But maybe for the precision that we require, and with the kinds of sizes of systematic uncertainties like that we see, that's not actually going to be the end of the game. But I think we do need to find some way to deal with that. And it's not just an LLP thing, it's BDT-based searches and analyses in general. Oh, and as a general comment, I absolutely think that we should be preserving these somehow. right now, in whatever format, I think they should go out with the analysis, because if it's not there, then we can't even try. And I was looking at analyses for recasting recently with a summer student, and some just publish, hey, here's the distribution that comes out of our BDT. You have no way of reproducing it, and you can't reproduce our analysis, but have a pretty picture. And I even just putting a set of binary files of dubious usability online would have allowed us to try. So everything is up from here.
I mean, this also raises, I mean, so this is all for BDTs, but it also does raise this question of, is there really an equivalent simple way of preserving neural nets, right? So people are using increasingly complex, you know, deep networks and stuff. So BDT is a simple object that you can, in principle, write down in C++. And even if you just give someone the TMVA XML, in principle, someone could probably reverse engineer it eventually. But a neural network is a much more complicated object. Is it feasible to preserve that as well? Now, I know there's this ONNX standard, which has been mentioned in the past, that some people might be aware of. I'm not sure what the something neural net exchange. Is this as really as flexible as just, I mean, presumably it's not just a kind of raw C++ or pure Python, is it? I mean, maybe Jordan, you know a bit more about this probably than I do at least.
Yeah, so ONNX is essentially this JSON file that encodes the entirety of a neural network. It works with pretty much all the major neural network libraries like TensorFlow, JAX, PyTorch, scikit-learn, and so on. I would definitely encourage moving to this for a standard because, I mean, this is backed by companies like Facebook and Microsoft and IBM, so I don't see this going away anytime soon. And it's a plain text format, which is very interoperable for working with C++ and with Python.
Okay, so that's, because I think I'd read somewhere, speaking to people, I'd heard it still did have some kind of maybe less obvious dependencies, but if it's just a JSON file in the end, then this is, hopefully pretty basic. So I think
I did look into this when I started writing these BDT converters. I thought, well, ONNX is the canonical example. I'll take a look at that. And perhaps, I mean, I didn't read the entire spec end to end. I was doing that thing of searching the document for keywords that I was interested in. I wanted to know about things like backward compatibility and or schema evolution sort of vendor specific aspects. And I remember seeing some slightly red flags in there declaring that ONNX explicitly was not a guaranteed backwards compatibility format and that there were spaces left in the format for implementation specific things. So this isn't by no means a definitive statement, but there were certain things in the spec that made me wonder just how long-term safe are these. It seems to be a nice way currently to save neural nets, but is it guaranteed to work to transfer over the kinds of timescales that we would ideally like our results to remain valid?
I suppose it's probably a good first step, right? And probably we should not try to make the perfect the enemy of the good here. That's my gut.
Yeah, feeling. Again, I would, if the ONNX files can be put in Epdata, it works now, and maybe something can be done to preserve it. There was also a presentation at the Reinterpretation Forum meeting in, what was that, February? Mm-hmm. I think it was Harrison Prosper, in his slides, made some reference to a couple of libraries that will do a similar sort of preserving as vanilla C++ for at least TensorFlow. There are some things out there, but I think they're, by the nature of the neural net being a more complicated object, I think it saves it as a file that can be used with some standalone C++ classes rather than something that's 100% completely independent of any framework.
Okay.
I'm just going to try looking at that up and I'll paste the link in the chat if I can find it.
That's good. Thank you. So it sounds like there are at least tentatively, we can say that there's something that would kind of fit the bill in terms of what we need for now in most cases, or at least something that is a good starting point for both BDTs and neural nets. So I think probably one thing that we could take out of this is that, you know, people should probably be trying to keep these in Hepdata in kind of either this ONNX format or in raw, you know, C++ or Python. Even if it's not clear whether you can smear the inputs properly, etc. But as Andy said, if you don't even put something there so people can try, then kind of you've already lost before even you know, before you even start. And of course, this becomes increasingly difficult as people disappear and as time moves on and analysts do other things. So maybe that's already a good outcome of this, is to identify that it is possible now to preserve BDTs in a kind of fairly backwards compatible way, and that this is probably somewhere we should begin. Okay, on the shared doc, there was a comment by Jose, who unfortunately wasn't able to be here in person, but this question of what additional information do you need for this to be useful is quite interesting. So I guess, Andy, you touched on this as well, is that if someone puts in a BDT, then that's great, fine. But if, you know, how well can you check if it's doing the right thing? I suppose the answer is that that experimentalists should be providing kind of, I guess, a cut flow or something like that to say, okay, how many events from this kind of well-defined sample are gonna pass kind of some cut on this? On this BDT, that's probably something that should be helpful. And then additional information, like what do the inputs look like for all of these? So I don't know whether it's useful to have, you know, for us to give the distributions of all of the inputs of the BDTs. I mean, in some cases, this could become a problem, right? So some neural networks have, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of inputs. So perhaps this already becomes too much. So maybe it'd be useful to hear from the participants from the theory side, kind of, if we were to give you a way of running the BDTs yourselves, what additional information would you want to have alongside it? Okay, I guess it's kind of a big question that I've dropped on you, but if people have thoughts, then please feel free to shout. Okay. So in the meantime, something which I wanted to just touch on at least is that in Atlas, we have this Recast project where, unfortunately, Recast is a bit of a generic name, but what this means is that Atlas searches are trying to make an effort to containerize the analyses. And what that means is to kind of have a Docker container which stores the analysis software and all its dependencies in a nice kind of well-packaged software container that you could, in principle, just run via Docker on any operating system, which is a step forward from things like just having kind of the GitLab repository public, because as you know, just having the source code doesn't mean that you can compile it properly. So this is quite nice, and it has been used in the past, in particular, yeah, and for LLP searches to kind of recast in terms of other models. This is still, I think, a work in progress in terms of exposing it to the theory community. So what's missing there is figuring out like how theorists might be able to request recasts of existing Atlas searches. And something which is missing here is that the current input to this recast framework is kind of intermediary Atlas formats, so our AOD or DAOD formats. But there is work ongoing to see if we can kind of get the whole chain in, including from kind of, you know, from a UFO file or an SLHA file. So then I guess maybe a question. Okay, there's a couple of questions around this topic. The first one is maybe directed to CMS colleagues of, is there a similar effort happening in CMS for containerization? And are there, you know, is there anything maybe here to compare to? And the second thing is, if for the theory, for theorists, kind of what would be the best way of kind of, in your opinion, to be able to share this information with you? So would it be the case that would you be, for example, happy to provide kind of a bunch of kind of HEPMC format events that could then be processed through the recast for a bunch of searches? Or would it be better, or would you prefer if, you know, you gave a kind of UFO file and some kind of like set of parameters to run through Magraph or whatever? Are either of those options feasible? I mean, I think it's not necessarily the case that Atlas would be able to to respond to all requests, but I'm just kind of trying to explore what would be kind of what would work from the theorist side.
Well, Louis,
go ahead, please.
Go on, Nishita. No.
So both of these ideas are really good, and obviously the UFO plus whatever card file is much less effort on the theorist's part, but brings in an uncertainty based on generator parameters and so on your side. So I think this is a conversation we need to have a bit more. There's an advantage to just providing a UFO file plus cards, which is that then you would run it through your machinery and you would use the same kind of tunes that you used for your own Monte Carlo generation. Whereas if we generate the HEPMC file, then we probably use Pythia defaults or whatever, and it might not match. So I don't know what how big an effect that would make. But if it is easier for you, then of course it's not really a big pain for theorists to generate HEPMC files either, because I think that pipeline is now fairly standard. So yeah, either of those works.
But in the case of HEPMC files, they will be huge at some cases.
I agree. So it might be, so that is an additional consideration about how to provide you with these files with enough statistics. Which we'll have to deal with. Yeah.
The question of statistics is important, right? Because in the end, a lot of these have got kind of fairly low efficiencies in the end for some of the signals. So you might have to generate a fairly large number of these events to make it, to get a reasonable result out. That's an important question. But the question of the tunes as well is something which is good to talk about. As I said, I don't think Atlas is there yet in terms of really being able to kind of just accept things at the kind of UFO or HEPMC level. But I think it's worth kind of bouncing some ideas around already just to kind of figure out what might work, what might not work, and what the possible drawbacks would be. So, okay. Those two points are very important, because the size would be an issue, right? Because it would be an enormous file and you'd have to figure out a way of passing that from the theorists to the experiments in a reasonable way. Are there other thoughts and ideas on this topic?
But that's also, to a certain extent, antithetical to the directions that, at least in Atlas, people have been pushing for a while, right? This notion that there should be no reason why someone should provide, specific HEPMC files, LHE files or something, when in principle, if you control everything with respect to distributions, releases of generator, this can be done centrally. There's no real need to worry about these kinds of things. Like the idea, the idea with things like recast, which again originally was sort of designed to be this thing that solved the problem, this reinterpretation problem the open data for reinterpretation problem versus the desire for the experiments to have some kind of quality control with respect to what comes out, right? And so there's an idea that is input, and then there's sort of an automated thing that goes through and then spits out, a new document or a new pub note or a new result that, again, the experiments still have to shepherd along to its completion, to its publication, right? And so it still has to go through this kind of vetting process, but it's also not just here's, 300 terabytes worth of raw data, do what you want to with it, in principle, there should be a way to make it really straightforward for this to happen, right? So the theorists, they don't have to prepare their own HEPMC files and send them to, at least to Atlas.
So one idea that I heard from, okay, so this is maybe slightly tangential, but you'll see where I'm coming from. Like from the the SUSE side, the idea of using recast is because in the SUSE models, you have this kind of well-defined SLHA format where you can kind of provide just a list of parameters. It's like a string of, well, kind of a vector of maybe kind of 19 or more floats. But then everything else is kind of well fixed in kind of theoretical framework. So I was wondering if we have a, like, is there, would it be possible to have a similar thing for LLPs? And I guess we discussed like simplified models, simplified LLP models in previous workshops. But it feels like we need something where like you wouldn't even need to provide a UFO file. You could just say, okay, here are the kind of parameters I want you to check. And this is kind of something that's unambiguously defined that could be then propagated through the Atlas chain without as much human intervention. Because I think you're right, James, there's always going to have to be some shepherding going along. And even in terms of releasing the results, I don't think the experiments would just kind of blindly kind of let something go out that had the Atlas label on it. But maybe that's kind of also something that we should look at. Is there a way that we can really simplify the question of kind of what is it you want us to generate, and can you kind of write that down in a minimal way with kind of maybe even the values of certain parameters, and that keeps everything else fixed? Or do we want more flexibility than that? Okay, I guess it's an open question. Is there someone from CMS who maybe can comment about similar efforts? Or I guess CMS has gone more down the open data route. I guess, are there, for example analyses from the CMS open data which include kind of longer particle signatures? Okay, kind of a big question.
I don't think that open data has been used for LLPs.
But could it in principle? Do you have all the inputs you would need, or like would you need special formats to do the LLP searches?
I don't actually know. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm putting big questions out there, and we don't necessarily have all the answers here. Okay, maybe since it's already 4:05. I guess one thing that would be interesting to circle back to is, I guess, where we started with this idea of models where you don't even need to generate new events, right? Because all of this difficulty comes from having to generate new events. And that means you need to know how those events would be categorized by a machine learning framework. So, I mean, hopefully Jan is still connected. Are there any other requirements than kind of providing you an efficiency map or the upper limits to be able to be used in models? So do you need to kind of write down your results in terms of some particular kind of simplified model for this to be useful? So I'm thinking maybe to just give a concrete example, I work on the search for displaced jets in calorimeter in Atlas, and we use kind of hidden valley models where it's kind of Higgs mediated, whatever, as a benchmark. Would those results be enough for a smallest implementation, or would it be better for us to also present results in terms of other models which you can already use?
Well, it depends. I don't know this model right now, but and I'm not sure if it has a Z2 symmetry, so if it's of that kind. But in principle, I mean, the working principle is independent of that. Of course, it's just a restriction right now in the code. So the important thing is that it's a well-defined simplified model. So there's only one topology, so you have not a mixture of different things. Then we need something like the efficiency as the function of these simplified model parameters. And of course, we need the limit, upper limit of the fiducial cross section, or on the number of events in in that signal region. However you define it, it doesn't matter how do you define it, but I mean we need some yield, right? And if we have the expected and the observed, we can also derive some likelihood. So these are the three things that we actually need: efficiency maps in terms of a well-defined model that we can treat in our framework, and then the observed and expected limits for the yields. Yeah.
And I mean, is it useful to provide you directly with even the likelihood, if it involves a likelihood fit in the end, like in a PyHF type format? Is that useful to you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean this is something we recently implemented, and this is fully supported by S models. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Okay, so this sounds like a very for these analyses where the cut flows are not easy to reproduce necessarily without kind of the full machinery. This sounds like as you demonstrated in your talk, then potentially if you can get around having to generate any events, then I think this would solve a lot of headaches. But we need to make sure then that we're also preserving this sort of material that you've mentioned.
Sure, sure. I mean, of course, one is always, restricted to the kind of simplified models you're looking at, right? So, I mean, you cannot go beyond that. That's a apparent limitation here. But, I mean, if it's sufficiently, useful in a sense that something like that appears in a certain range of full models, say, then it's of course extremely useful. Yeah,
but I think we should not really forget that the point of reinterpretation is to apply limits on very different models that would give the same signature, not necessarily the same topology. So, it's of course good in the absence of anything else to have at least something in the form of simplified models. But I think,
exactly.
We should lose sight of the main goal of preservation and reinterpretation, which is to apply the search to models that may be different.
I think it's just two different goals, right? I mean, it's not one or the other. It's. Just something else, I would say, yeah.
I have an idea about the first discussion we had about preserving the BDT, the boundaries, et cetera. Would it be helpful? I mean, obviously, at the end of the day, it's not going to be long-term. I mean, how do you define long-term? It's another question, but would it be helpful to put the true positive, true negative, false positive, false negative rates by definition for the interpretation studies? I mean, I'm supposing that we don't have the luxury to put all those binary files, let's say, but instead, just for numbers, could it be helpful for interpretation? Because most of the time, in the papers, we see at least accuracy, right? Not.
It's a good question.
I know. I mean, if you really apply the BDT, it changes the shape. Yes, but okay. At least, I mean, we can have this for the moment.
So essentially, yeah, okay. I think I need to think about that point a little bit myself.
but anyways, I mean, if you give the BDT distributions for both the signal and the background, then okay, the numbers are there inside the plot. But would it be helpful? This is my question, and I couldn't find an answer, easy, quick answer.
Are there people who do have an easy, quick answer? It sounds like no, but certainly something to think about. Thank you for the suggestion. Well, I guess we're kind of nearing the end of the session here, but I've just seen that there are additional comments that have been left in the live doc. So thank you for people who've been kind of adding this. I guess There was a question of which long-lived analyses actually use these BDTs and machine learning. And okay, I have to kind of put my hand up that the Atlas Cal Ratio one uses both kind of displaced jet tagger and also a kind of event level BDT, which tries to separate kind of events that look like they've got pairs of displaced jets versus beam induced background and QCD. So there's at least one. But it's true that if you're only using an object level one, maybe you can get away with giving an efficiency. I think probably a lot of the complication does come from having to juggle. Well, in my example case, you have kind of scores for each jet, and then you have to kind of input those into the event level BDT, and it all gets very quickly very messy. Maybe the situation is a bit simpler for the object level taggers, which it seems like those are kind of the dominant types of machine learning usage for at least CMS's long-lived results.
So my thought on that, if I can express it, would be that, yeah, it's very, very similar to the situation for a lot of prompt analyses, right? Like we commonly use neural nets or BDTs and so on for tagging for other objects that we use in, whether it's TAOs, jet tagging, what have you. And we don't expect anyone outside of Atlas to be able to use that. They don't have the simulation for it anyway, right? Instead, we just provide the efficiencies and make it possible to calculate what the impact should be from that. And this seems to me to be exactly the same scenario. So at least from the way that I would think about it, it's only at an event level where the question becomes particularly complicated. I mean, it's always difficult to figure out exactly how you want to parameterize your object level uncertainties. And that question is maybe harder for long-lived particles than for prompt analyses. But I think it's the long-lived nature always makes that question difficult, whether you have a BDT or an NN or not, rather than that making the situation particularly worse.
I mean, for me, it's the fact that long-lived searches can often use kind of a lot of prompt searches, if they're using a BDT, will use just kinematic distributions like PTs of various objects and their number or whatever. But if you're kind of starting to look about kind of different layers of the calorimeter and timing and stuff like that, I think which are kind of particularly prevalent, I think, in long-lived particle searches, I think this can at least exacerbate the situation. So yeah, I think
But this is true for long-lived analyses which don't use machine learning. There's often hit-based quantities or hit timing or what have you. And I think a lot of the results which have provided parameterized efficiencies have managed to do that in spite of those difficulties. And so if they can do it, I think the question is, can you do it if you're using a BDT or a neural net tagger for your, say, displaced jet? And I think you could. I would be very interested in seeing one of these two or either of these two analyses providing those reinterpretation, like parameterized efficiencies for reinterpretation, and maybe doing a closure test to see how good it is. Because I would suspect that you could probably get closure within 50% if you were smart about how you parameterize. I think we should try and see.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, that would be certainly an interesting test. If we want to set ourselves some homework for the next LLP workshop, I mean, it'd be great to be able to come back and say, well, yeah, if you can do it in this way, then, and it's good enough, as you say, within some thresholds, then that's information that I don't feel like we have right now, and that would certainly be very useful.
Yeah, because I think in terms of the effort that analyzers need to put in to make this sort of reinterpretation material, that would be the easiest way. And so if it works and if we can do it simply, then we should just do that and not go down a rabbit hole even further,
Yeah, that's a fair comment. Okay. I almost missed your hand. Andrew, you had a comment.
Yeah, I had a comment similar to previous one that all these problems, to my taste, they appear now also in CAD-based analysis, because we often have some machine learning at lower level, at particle identification or whatever. And in the end, all these all this story repeats. Long-lived searches often need to produce first ever calibration of detector level variables. So yeah, I just think that this problem is common now for CAD-based analysis and the ones with BDT too.
Okay. No, good. Yes, it's interesting. So, if you can do it for CAD-based, then probably you can do it for machine learning. This is just me thinking aloud here again, but at least for a BDT where in principle you can figure out what each cut was on each object, then you should be able to map that where the features are kind of well defined. Okay, I guess I don't have much more I need to think about it a bit more, and I think maybe we're probably coming up towards the wrap up of this very interesting brainstorming session. Before I try and kind of synthesize a little bit what we've said, are there any other kind of out of the blue comments or any other remarks that people would like to make at this stage? Okay, sounds like no. So I think people took different things out of this from me, but my kind of hot take out of this is that it seems like it's now plausible or possible to preserve the algorithms that we use, that we train, in formats that will withstand the medium term, at least, if not longer, whether it's a BDT or a neural net. And that's kind of a pure C++ implementation of your BDT, or it's an Onyx JSON representation of your neural net. And it sounds to me like, okay, I know from experience that converting the BDT XML into C++ takes about 10 seconds. So, you know, this sounds to me like something that we should be preserving on HepData anyway. I don't think it hurts anyone. I don't think it makes it any, I don't think it's an additional really an additional burden. So perhaps this is something that we can, as experimentalists, look into doing. The other thing to say is that, okay, if you can rerun them, then that's great. But if your inputs are kind of non-standard, not just kinematic variables, then probably it's worth really figuring out if there are cases where you can't easily parameterize those, because kind of if you can parameterize things in a reasonable way within some threshold, then okay, you probably don't need to go through the pain of a full detector simulation. Possibly even you can parameterize your the object taggers themselves. But however, my feeling is that that doesn't necessarily mean that you shouldn't include the serialized neural network or the kind of preserved BDT, because I mean, I think that sounds like it would always be useful. And potentially we can narrow down the cases which are kind of really difficult to solve to a kind of very much, much smaller subset where you would need something like a containerized analysis to solve. Maybe that's only for kind of the real corners. And actually a lot of these problems might not be so different from just cut-based ones if you can parameterize things nicely. So I don't know whether we want to set ourselves some homework to see if maybe by LLP 10, which is the next workshop, we can see if some of the analyses which do use machine learning can kind of do this closure test that was suggested. Maybe that's something that we can take out of this. And final thought was that we should not forget that there are other ways of recasting that don't involve regenerating events. And this is the approach taken, for example, in these models, and making sure that kind of the information that is needed for that approach is also preserved. So, okay, that's kind of my takeaway from this. And I think from my perspective, at least, it's been a very nice opportunity to kind of clarify some of these issues. So I'd like to thank everyone who took part. And I think we're probably going to be able to start the coffee break on time.
Yes, it's a very, very good thing. And yeah, just to second what you said, I think it's probably a good idea to in addition to this recording, which is nice, people can come back to it, but follow up on what you said, in addition to some like homework, it might be nice to just put together a very quick, you know, even a few paragraphs, you know, page sort of summary of the open questions that need to be solved, that need to be answered, that have been raised, and then sort of, you know, the action items that people could actually do in the next 6 months before the, or whatever months before the November workshop, like you said. And it's because I think this is a very rich soil to dig into. So it's worth following up in a kind of formalized manner. So maybe we could put that together from the organizer's side.
I can take that as my action, as punishment for organizing.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think
a really good.
And discussion. Then we meet back. We start again at 16:35 in 13 minutes with non-standard backgrounds for the high luminosity LHC for long wave particle searches.